If you have your Bibles this morning, if you would open them to Genesis chapter 41. The song that Bill just did really can serve as a foundation for how I introduced this. I may touch on some nerves here, so if I do, you can hit me later, okay? You realize there is no glory in poverty. You know that. That doesn't mean that there are people who are in poverty who are there for no other reason than because they were a victim of circumstances. I understand that. But there is no glory in poverty. But there's also no glory in being rich. Nothing wrong with it, okay? Nothing wrong with wealth. Bible speaks a lot about wealth. I want to suggest to you that in whatever situation we find ourselves in, the question I want to raise this morning is, will you be content? Now, this is a two-part question. You know, whether you have a lot or a little, Paul said, he learned the secret of being content. He says, I've been in poverty and I've had abundance. And I've learned the secret. And I want to kind of unpack that secret with you this morning. Because in our tendency in our culture is that when we enter into good times, we sometimes forget who made those times possible. Isn't that true? We're almost like a kid, a child, and I've used this illustration before. When Joey was young, I'd put like a quarter in my hand or a candy, and I tighten it, and I tell him he has to get it open, you know, to get it. And, you know, he'd struggle, and, you know, eventually I'd let him open my hand. And like every kid, he'll get what's there and do what? Shove the hand away. And I suspect we kind of do that with God. And that's our tendency. So I want to ask you another question, and I don't need to know this answer. I don't want to know this answer. But if you, for some reason, entered into good fortune, let's say you got a promotion at work, and now your pay really skyrocketed, and you know you're going to be plush, you know, now. Would that change you? Would that change the way you look at God? Now, I hear people saying, no, be careful. Because our tendency, especially as men sometimes, is to say, look what I did. You know, look at my accomplishment here. I did this. You know, I did this. And we fail to recognize that sometimes it's the good hand of God that made it possible. I want to ask a more revealing question, and this is the one I don't want to know the answer to, really. But if you hit the jackpot in the lottery, I think the New York lottery recently was $320 million or something like that. If you hit that, would that change you? You know, and the change is either for the better or for the good. Now, as I said before, there's no glory in being living in poverty, and there's no glory being rich. It's how we handle the circumstances. And the example of Joseph, I think, gives us an illustration of two things. Joseph was being trained to be a leader. And in that training process, and it was a process, we're going to pick this up now. Joseph is in prison now for a little more than 13 years. And he's put there because of a crime he never committed. You know the story. Over those 13 years, God used the process of teaching Joseph humility, teaching Joseph to be content in whatever circumstance in which he finds himself. And that's a hard process sometimes, right? When Joseph was younger and God first gave him that calling, those dreams that he was going to lead his brothers and his father eventually. Although he told the truth, I imagine he was a little bit more brash, maybe a little arrogancy. And God had to chip that away in order to prepare Joseph for what's next. Now, here's the thing about that type of discipleship or any type of discipleship. When God prunes our lives or chips away at the stuff that needs to be chipped away at, it could be a painful process, can it? Someone once told me that plants feel things. I don't know if they do or not. When I lived up in North Jersey, my mother would try to plant some stuff. I'd run over it with the lawnmower. I thought it was crabgrass. I have no idea. But in saying that, I could imagine if plants could feel something, how a tree feels when it gets pruned. But pruning is necessary for many plants and trees to do what? Grow healthy. It's the same thing with us. We need to be pruned. And God will do that if we let him. He did it with Joseph through prison. And Joseph is now more humble, more accepting that God is in control, even though he's in a prison for something that he didn't do. He didn't have two nickels to rub together. But things are going to change. Joseph is going to win the lottery, if I could put it that way. Look at chapter 41 with me. Starting verse 1. It says, when 2 full years had passed, this is from the time that Joseph interpreted the dreams for the cupbearer and the baker. Remember that? 2 full years had passed. Pharaoh had a dream. He was standing by the Nile. When out of the river came 7 cows, sleek and fat. They grazed among the reeds. Among them, 7 other cows, ugly and gaunt, how you like that description, came out of the Nile and stood beside those on the riverbank. And the cows that were ugly and gaunt ate up the 7 sleek, fat cows. Then Pharaoh woke up. That's kind of a bizarre dream, huh? Well, Pharaoh fell asleep again, it says in verse 5, and had a second dream. 7 heads of grain, healthy and good, were growing on a single stalk. After them, 7 other heads of grain sprouted, thin and scorched by the east wind. The thin heads of grain swallowed up the 7 healthy heads, full heads. Then Pharaoh woke up. It had been a dream. In the morning, his mind was troubled. So he sent for all the magicians and wise men of Egypt. Pharaoh told them told them his dream, but no one could interpret it for him. Now, Pharaoh was a demanding man, number one. And, if I was on Pharaoh's staff and he asked me to interpret a dream, I kind of would be afraid, to be honest with you, because if I give him the wrong interpretation, guess where I'm going, right? You're going to be like the baker. You're going to get hung. So you have this dynamic going on, and God gave Pharaoh these 2 dreams. Now I want to issue a word of caution here. God primarily speaks to us through the scriptures today. Okay. Now, can he still speak to us in other ways? Absolutely. But listen to what I'm going to say. When God speaks, he never contradicts the scriptures. And he never contradicts his own character. So, let me give you a bizarre instance, all right? How many of you read about these young teens, this Bonnie and Clyde situation that's going on? They were captured, by the way. Okay? Let's say I had a conversation with them. This is fictional now. Let's say I had a conversation with them, and they say to me, God told me to do that. I'd say, you're nuts. That's against God's character. It's against his word. But here we have something supernatural going on, and Pharaoh at least had the sense enough at this time to realize he had these 2 dreams. It may mean something. He called his people together. My guess is people were too afraid to touch it, and they probably didn't have the gifts to interpret it. So then the cupbearer, after 2 years, says in verse 9, said to Pharaoh, I am reminded of my shortcomings. Pharaoh was once angry with his servants. He imprisoned me and the chief baker in the house of the guard, captain of the guard. Each of us had a dream the same night. Each dream had its own meaning. Now a young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. We told him our dreams, and he interpreted them for us, giving each of us the interpretation of his dream. And things turned out exactly as he interpreted them. I was restored to my position. The other man was impaled or hung. Okay? So he's recounting what Joseph did in ministering in prison. And I want to come back to that for a second. Joseph, despite his bad circumstances, found contentment. And when he saw that the cupbearer and the baker were kind of downcast and despairing, he went up to him and he just said, can I help? He had his own troubles, but he said, can I help? But this turned out to be Jacob's track record. Joseph. Joseph's track record. Joseph continued to minister, whether he was originally in Potiphar's house, he ministered. When he was wrongly accused, he ministered in prison. And now he keeps ministering the 13 years. He's established a faithfulness of ministry, and people are saying God is with this guy. And the cupbearer remembers. Look at verse 14. So Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. This was more than a jail. Right? I mean, jails today aren't the most pleasant places to be, but this was a dungeon. Right? This was dark. It was probably damp. It was probably muddy. You know, you name it. Wasn't a pleasant place to be. He was brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and clothed himself, he came before Pharaoh. I think it's interesting that, you know, he cleaned up. He comes before Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph in verse 15, I had a dream, and no one can interpret it. But I have heard it said of you, when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. And I love Joseph's response. I want you to catch this. I cannot do it, Joseph said to Pharaoh. But God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. If there's anything that Joseph has learned over the years, is that anything that Joseph can do in ministry or for the kingdom of God has to originate with God, and it's all his doing. And Joseph is saying, no, we give God the glory here. We give God the glory. The second thing I want you to notice is this. He didn't manipulate the situation. You realize because we are born with the sin nature of Adam, we are all manipulators. We want to manipulate to get what we want, when we want it, how we want it. That is the nature of the sin nature, to manipulate to get what we want. What Joseph did not do here to Pharaoh is say, hey, Pharaoh, I can do this. What's in it for me? Would you have bargained for that? Here's this guy, 13 years in prison. And, you know, in our opportunist type thinking and our sin nature, we would say, yeah, I can do this, Pharaoh, but will you get me out of here? Not a hint of that. He just said, he was honest with Pharaoh. He said, I can't do it, but God can do it. Verse 17, then Pharaoh said to Joseph, in my dream, I was standing on the bank of the Nile when out of the river came the seven cows, fat, sleek, and they grazed among the reeds. After them, seven other cows came up, scrawny, very ugly, and lean. They went from ugly to very ugly now, right? and lean. I never saw such ugly cows in all the land of Egypt. The lean cow, the lean ugly cows ate up the seven fat cows that came up first. But even after they ate them, no one could tell what they had done, so they looked just as ugly as before when I woke up. I mean, this was really deep in Pharaoh. You know, something was going on here. And he says, in my dream, I saw seven heads of grain, full and good, growing on a single stalk. After them, seven other heads sprouted, withered and thin, scorched by the east wind. The thin heads of grain swallowed up the seven good heads. I told this to the magicians, but none of them could explain it to me. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one and the same. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he's about to do. Joseph didn't say, I'm going to reveal it. He said, God's going to reveal it. So Joseph continues to use the gifts God has given to him to minister without question. Shows his faithfulness, his character, his humility, and the fact that he can do this even in the midst of injustice. Have any of you ever felt like you were dealt a hand of injustice? We've all been there, one way or another. We felt like we've been wronged. We feel like, you know, somebody was out to get us maybe, or accused of something that we didn't do. And, you know, it's easy to let bitterness and anger build up. But if we don't bring this before God, we don't let God work with it, that bitterness and anger begins to consume us, begins to imprison us, and we live a miserable life. Joseph, in his process of God working with him, realized he couldn't live that way. In fact, I liked what Evelyn said before as she was giving testimony. You know, she said she left here last week, and she was kind of down, and I was glad to hear it wasn't because of the preaching, but she said she was kind of down, and she went home and she got the praise music going, and God really spoke to her heart, and only God can do that, isn't that right? Only God can do that. Joseph was maturing here. He showed humility. He wasn't manipulating the situation to try to get out of jail. And he simply explained to Pharaoh what was going on. Look at verse 29. Here's the interpretation. 7 years of great abundance are coming throughout the land of Egypt, but 7 years of famine will follow. Okay. Now, historically, we know that's true. The historians of the time that had nothing to do with the writing of the Bible had recorded that famine. 7 years. But there were 7 years of abundance. There were 7 years where the crops produced much more than they ever expected. So 7 years of great abundance are coming throughout the land of Egypt, but 7 years of famine will follow. Then all the abundance of Egypt will be forgotten and the famine will ravage the land. That verse kind of haunts me. You know why? Because when things are going well, it's like we don't have a care in the world. We think that, you know, if we can get past the arrogance that we somehow deserve it, and we realize that any blessing we get comes from the good hand of God. And it doesn't say we don't work hard. It doesn't say that we shouldn't improve our situation. We should. And we should work hard. That's the ethic. However, any blessings that come as a result of that come directly from the hand of God. And in saying that, you realize that in one instant, God can take it all away. Isn't that right? I know my parents lived through the stock market crash, the Great Depression, and one day it was gone. Just in one day. And you know the story, a lot of people couldn't handle it. They couldn't handle it. There was abundance, and then nothing. In 1991, the lives of many people were changed in an instant in the first terrorist bombing at the World Trade Center. There was abundance, and all of a sudden there wasn't anymore. And then September 11th. I mean, I can give you an example after an example. There was going to be a time of plenty and a time of famine. Look how this plays out. Verse 32 says, the reason the dream was given to Pharaoh in two forms is that the matter has been firmly decided by God, and God will do it soon. And now, Joseph gives advice to Pharaoh that shows the wisdom. And this was written before Solomon, okay? But if you read Proverbs, or you read some of Jesus' sermons and teachings, you realize that the Bible encourages planning. Wise stewardship and planning. If you come to Financial Peace tonight, that's what you're going to hear. There's nothing wrong with planning for the future. Nothing wrong with that. And Joseph, in that process of God maturing him to become a leader, understood that. And he gives Pharaoh incredible advice. He says in verse 34, let Pharaoh appoint commissioners over the land. He didn't say appoint me. He said, let him appoint commissioners over the land to take a fifth of the harvest of Egypt during the 7 years of abundance. And he goes on to say, they should collect all the food of these years that are coming and storing up the grain under the authority of Pharaoh to be kept in the cities for food. This to me sounds like the emergency fund, doesn't it? Because there could come a day where you get handed a pink slip. There could come a day when, God forbid, your health changes in an instant. Next verse. This food should be held in reserve for the country to be used during the 7 years of famine that will come upon Egypt, so that the country may not be ruined by the famine. Good advice, huh? From a young man. Verse 37. The plan seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his officials. So Pharaoh asked them, can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God? Isn't that interesting? The pagan recognizes what's going on. That God is upon this servant. That he served well in prison. You see, I think Jesus said it this way. When you're faithful in the little things, I'll give you great things. Isn't that what he said? When you're faithful with the little things, then I'll put you in charge of great things. Look at the end of the story. Well, the end of his story. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has made all this known to you, and there is no one so discerning and wise as you, you shall be in charge of my palace. He went from the dungeon to the palace. And all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you. Wow. If I can go one more verse, it's not up there, but it says, so Pharaoh said to Joseph, I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt. 13 years. There's another principle here that we don't like to talk about, and that is the principle of suffering. Sometimes God can use suffering in our lives to prepare us for what's next. Isn't that true? If we let Him. There are people suffer. We know that. And we suffer for a lot of reasons. But the suffering that Joseph went through was suffering for no fault of his own. He simply was accused of a wrong crime. He simply told his brothers the truth. He might have said it arrogantly, but he simply told them the truth. Brothers wanted to kill him. They decided not to. They sell him into slavery. Ends up in Egypt. Ends up in a good position in Egypt until Potiphar's wife tried to seduce him. When he said no, she got revenge. She made false accusations. He ends up in prison. And he suffers again. We live in a country that doesn't like suffering. We live in a culture that teaches if you're suffering, you're doing something wrong. Now, I'm going to say the same thing I said at the beginning about poverty. There's no glory in suffering per se. But when we suffer for doing the right thing, in God's eyes, and we submit and yield to God and say, Lord, I don't know how this is going to end up. I don't know what's going to come out of this, but I have to be faithful to you through it all. Then God's going to prepare us for what's next. So I put, you have the slides up? I just put a couple of things together that might help you. This is not as detailed as I would like to get it, but the week's been kind of busy. Just to give you some pointers. So how do we handle the good times? Go ahead, Ed. We wait upon God. That seems simple, right? How uncomfortable would it have been this morning when we started the service, if I didn't say anything for 20 minutes, we just sat in silence for 20 minutes. How uncomfortable would that have been? Would you say, you know, there's something wrong with Pastor? You know, what's going on? We live in a culture where we're not used to silence anymore, right? We live in a culture where we're not used to waiting anymore. You go to Burger King or you go to McDonald's or you go to Wendy's and heaven forbid you wait more than 10 seconds, you're already tapping the steering wheel and, you know, saying, you know, what's going on here? Joseph needed to learn what it was to wait on God. How many years did Moses have to wait? We can't wait 40 seconds. Joseph waited 13 years. Keep going now. We realize we can do nothing for God's kingdom without Him. Evelyn mentioned the pity party before, and we've all been there. If you want a way out of the pity party, do what Joseph did. Minister to others in need. Minister to others in need. Get your eyes off yourself and minister to other people who need to know the love of Jesus Christ. But realize it's not us. That we can do nothing for the kingdom without His help and His power. Okay? And whatever we do, we give God the glory. Just like Joseph did. I can't interpret the dream. God can. We give God the glory. Go ahead, Em. Don't manipulate people. That's probably the hardest. Because it's so ingrained in our nature. Don't manipulate people. There's a difference between ministering to people and manipulating them. And I don't have time to go into today. We'll probably go into it in a couple of weeks. But just in a nutshell, the difference between ministry and manipulation is when you minister to somebody, you expect nothing in return. Gabish? When you minister to somebody, you expect nothing in return. Go ahead. And then should we be blessed with abundance, we still serve others. You remember, John Rockefeller, the big tycoon, right? At that time, he was a multimillionaire, maybe a billionaire, I don't know. But his biography says that when he had all that money in the bank and he was accumulating more and more, one of the magazines, Life or Time magazine, I don't remember which one, interviewed him and they said, "Mr. Rockefeller, how much is enough?" And he said, "After the next million." And he had that mentality. But in his biography, he also said that he had nights, many nights, where he could not sleep because he was worried that people were stealing from him while he was sleeping. And he would pace. I don't know what happened in his life, but it dawned on him that the only way not to worry is start to serve others with his wealth. And became one of the biggest philanthropic people of all time. Started to give away, helping people where they needed it. In fact, Ocean County Park up in Lakewood was a donation by Rockefeller. The land that Route 70 is on was a donation by Rockefeller. It used to be called the Rockefeller Highway. So he started to serve in his abundance, started to serve people who needed it. And then his biography said he slept like a baby. He didn't worry about it anymore. When we have abundance, we still serve others. I hope that helps. How do we handle good times? Do we forget about God? Do we say, look at what I did? Do we try to manipulate situations? Or do we remain faithful? Do we count the blessings that God is giving us? Whether a lot or a little. And will we still serve others? Let's pray.